It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. Currently 50 degrees and fair in beautiful downtown Kodiak, and they have northwest winds to 20 out at the airport right now, gusting to 31. That's in line with the weather forecast, which is calling for sunny skies, high near 50, and northwest winds 25 to 30, gusting to 40. Coming up on the Midday Report, today is the last day of Arctic Care. And today the Kennecott is due to return to Kodiak. There's a ghost barge in the YK Delta. And some Manly Hot Springs residents are experiencing flood frustration. That plus sobering news about drug overdose deaths.
Live from NPR News, I'm Janine Herbst. Israeli police pushed and beat pallbearers during a funeral for slain Al Jazeera journalist, American Shireen Abu Akleh, causing them to briefly drop the casket. NPR's Daniel Estrin has more.
Palestinians wanted to carry her body in a procession up a major road. That's a tradition to carry the body to be buried. Israeli police had arranged that her body be taken to the cemetery in a car, and so there was a disagreement, and forces charged at the pallbearers. Special police forces were beating people in the crowds, and police fired stun grenades.
NPR's Daniel Estrin. He says churches of all denominations rang their bells. The scenes illustrated the outpouring of grief across the Arab world that has followed Abu Akleh's death Wednesday during an Israeli military raid in the occupied West Bank. It's not clear who fired the deadly shot. A Russian court has extended the pre-trial detention of WNBA basketball star Brittany Griner by 1 month. NPR's Charles Maines has more.
The star center of the Phoenix Mercury was detained at a Moscow airport in February after vape cartridges containing cannabis oil were allegedly found in her luggage. Griner had just arrived for off-season play in the Russian Women's League. Her lawyer, Alexander Boykov, tells NPR Friday's court decision means Griner will remain in detention until around mid-June. She'll then likely face trial on drug possession charges that carry a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison. Boykov described Griner's mood as normal given circumstances and said she has no complaints about her treatment. Earlier this month, the U.S. government declared Griner wrongfully detained, a designation that places responsibility for her case with the U.S. Special Envoy for Hostage Affairs. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
A police department in California can take a big step toward ending nearly two decades of federal oversight after meeting reform measures connected to a police abuse scandal. NPR's Eric Westervelt has more.
Federal Judge William Orrick ruled the Oakland Police Department is now in compliance with more than 50 federally mandated reforms, from use of force to racial discrimination in traffic stops. The judge says the OPD on June 1st can now enter into a one-year sustainability or probationary period leading toward the end of federal oversight. Jim Channon, one of the lawyers who filed the lawsuit that brought the federal supervision, praises the OPD's reforms, but worries the department could easily backslide.
We've gone 20 years. They have a perfect record of never discovering and remedying a single scandal on their own. So I'm concerned about that.
But Oakland Police Chief LaRon Armstrong insists strong policies are in place to remain in federal compliance, what he calls the beginning of us building a new history for the Oakland PD. Eric Westervelt, NPR News.
Preliminary closing numbers on Wall Street, the Dow up 465 points, the Nasdaq up 434, the S&P 500 up 93. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
Today is the last day Kodiak residents can access free medical services through Arctic Care, That's the Department of Defense medical program that visits the island every year. Walk-ins are welcome at the Armory. That's off Mill Bay Road next to the school. Between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. for medical, dental, and optometry visits. Appointments for veterinary care can also be made at Kodiak College. More information is available at kodiakhealthcare.org. And the Kennecott was scheduled to be in town today. It's the second visit this season by an Alaska Marine Highway System ferry to Kodiak Island. The Kennecott will also stop in Port Lyons and Uzinki on her way to Kodiak before traveling onward to Homer and Seldovia. She's scheduled to next return to Kodiak on Monday. Kennecott is currently the only ferry serving the Kodiak Archipelago. The Tustamina, which also sails regularly to Kodiak, is still in the shipyard undergoing maintenance. She's expected to return to service by mid-July. Last fall, Alaska Logistics left two barges to freeze in the YK Delta rivers. KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports one barge has dislodged and become a free-floating ghost barge, winding down the Kuskokwim River. It's been stuck at Machivik Slough, just below Tuluksac, since Tuesday.
The ghost barge has a name. It's called the Lily. It traveled about 170 river miles down the Kuskokwim after dislodging from the ice when the river broke up at Georgetown on Sunday. Alaska Logistics owns the barge and left it to freeze in place last fall when an early cold snap sealed its wintry fate.
I don't know. They kind of caught us.
That's Ellen Long, a co-owner and manager of Alaska Logistics. Long said he made the decision to let the Lily freeze into the river when ice started to form around it in October, and its accompanying tugboat experienced motor issues. But he did take a couple of measures to secure it for breakup. His crew tried to brace the barge against a sandbar. Then they fastened the loader that it was carrying to its top. And third, they pumped it full of water to try to weigh it down to prevent it from capsizing.
We pumped about 15 or 20,000 gallons of water into it.
But despite their efforts, the barge got loose and the loader on top moved. Willie Phillips from Tuluksac saw it more than 150 miles into its journey. He took a boat out for logging and spotted it on Tuesday as it was passing the village.
Seems like it shifted a little bit forward. The front area was lower than the back.
It moved past the village and lodged itself into a sandbar at Machivik Slough. Other villagers along the Kuskokwim have been checking on it. Someone in Akiak traveled up the river to take photos of the Lily and posted them to Facebook. Long, the Alaska Logistics manager, chuckles when he thinks about the barge entertaining Kuskokwim residents. He's not concerned about the barge drifting too far or floating to sea.
The likelihood of it getting out the mouth is very, very, very small. It'll go aground somewhere, probably even before she's, I don't know, Napakiak could be my guess, somewhere down there, somewhere probably around Oscarville.
Long says it's not safe to go after the barge until the ice is all cleared up from the river. Ice is jammed on the Kuskokwim at Bethel. But once it's safe, Long says it should be easy to get the barge back.
We have our own tugboats and different friends that would help us find it. People kind of on standby and fishing boats.
The Lily wasn't the only Alaska Logistics barge to freeze into YK Delta rivers last fall. Another barge froze near Eek. But they anchored that one and it stayed in place. In 2019, Alaska Logistics had another barge freeze in place and then free float down the Kuskokwim during spring breakup. That one traveled from Aniak to Bethel. Long says his company has been moving freight by barge in the region for 20 years. He blames climate change for making freeze-ups and breakups, quote, more dramatic. When Long left the barges to freeze into the rivers in the fall, the Coast Guard told KYUK they were planning to do an investigation to see if there was any wrongdoing on the part of Alaska Logistics. The Coast Guard did not return phone calls on Thursday. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
Alaska had the highest increase of drug overdose deaths in the nation last year, according to provisional data released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Wednesday. Alaska's rate of drug overdose deaths is usually lower than the national average. Jessica Philly with the state's health department says Alaska is now leading the nation because of the synthetic opioid fentanyl.
It's just been a slower process to get up here. So I think what we saw happening on the East Coast in 2013 with this surge of fentanyl is just now hitting us up here. So we just have just more of an influx of the drug.
Alaska's rate of overdose deaths increased by more than 70% last year compared to 15% nationally, and national overdose deaths reached an all-time high. The state's health department recommends all Alaskans carry Naloxone, a drug that can rapidly reverse an overdose. Some Manly Hot Springs residents are frustrated by a lack of guidance and assistance as they begin the process of recovery from this past week's major ice jam flood event in the Tanana River community at the end of the Elliott Highway. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the state is transitioning from initial emergency response to recovery phase operations.
Local resident Kobe Purdy and her husband and their three kids are among about 50 people displaced by flood damage to their homes. Purdy says there's uncertainty about how to proceed with cleanup and repairs.
You know, people have come out and did a lot of talking, but everything is so slow moving and it doesn't feel like anything's been done yet. And everybody has all these contaminants in their yard and in their house.
Purdy lists fuel oil, gasoline, antifreeze, and sewage among contaminants in the floodwaters.
We're scared to, you know, go over and try to touch anything because we don't know what's on that ground or what is on everything. I mean, we've found dead fish in the middle of the road.
Purdy, who is trained in oil spill response, says there's so far no plan for dealing with fuel-tainted floodwaters.
They wanted us to just go and pump out our basements. That's what they wanted us to do. And I'm like, I'm not pumping that out into the environment.
Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation staff were expected to arrive in Manly Hot Springs yesterday. State Department of Emergency Management spokesperson Jeremy Zedek says while the initial focus has been on making sure people are safe and restoring essential services, the next major task is damage assessment.
The damage assessments will be conducted by, first and foremost, leadership within the community working in conjunction with an emergency manager that's been dispatched from the State Emergency Operations Center in conjunction with the Tanana Chief Conference and others like the American Red Cross.
Governor Dunleavy declared a disaster for the Manly Hot Springs area over the weekend, and Zedek says assessments are a prerequisite for leveraging state public and individual disaster assistance programs.
Once we get an assessment of what the damages are there in Manly, we'll know which programs we can activate, and then the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management will begin to implement those.
Zedek emphasizes that owners of flood-damaged homes and businesses do not have to wait to begin cleanup and repairs, but should meticulously document flood damage and everything they do to address it.
Take pictures, take video of the damage, make list. If you make any repairs and have any expenses, keep receipts for those expenses.
Zedek says the potential for federal assistance will hinge on the overall severity of Alaska's breakup flood season.
There'll come a time when we'll be able to evaluate the damage that has taken place statewide from these floods and see if we have enough damages to request a federal or a presidential disaster declaration, and that will activate FEMA on the disaster recovery side.
The state is also responding to flooding at Circle on the Yukon River and at McGrath, Sleep Mute, and Red Devil on the Kuskokwim. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Ulacon, the small smelt known in Lingit as Sock, has returned to the upper Lynn Canal, marking a celebration of spring. The nutrient-rich fish is essential for subsistence culture and marine life. As KHNS's Corinne Smith reports, a long-term research study is tracking the fish's populations across southeast Alaska to better understand and protect the species.
Meredith Pokar walks across the mudflats at the mouth of the Chilkoot River, headed to the water. There are some signs of spring, with shorebirds circling and the sun warming through a light layer of fog. But the Ulacon run, known as Sock and Tlingit, Candlefish, or Hooligan, are largely missing.
Yeah, it's a little disconcerting that this is the second year in a row that we haven't seen a run materialize on the Chilkoot River. We saw, a few days ago, we saw a small school of fish move in, and there's a lot of activity, and it looked like, you know, there's going to be a bunch more fish that came behind them, and yeah, we just didn't see them.
Pocart is here every day before and during the spring run from mid-April to mid-May. She's the lead researcher with the Chilkoot Indian Association's Regional Monitoring Project for the fish population. The first telltale sign of the spring run is the sound of the gulls and seabirds overhead and the seals and sea lions and sometimes orcas in the water. Another method is gathering DNA.
There's currently no fish in the Chilkoot River, but we'll still take samples and see if, you know, maybe some came in last night and spawned, or maybe there's some DNA around that we can still pick up from the samples.
Pocart fills two large bottles with water from the estuary. Those samples will go to a lab in Oregon to analyze the environmental DNA, engage fish populations, ecology, and distribution. The research project launched in 2010 after an alert went out along the West Coast that the Ulacan populations were in steep decline. They were labeled endangered in the waters off of Washington, Oregon, and California. It's not only a spring food source for Tlingit communities, but also important for medicinal, cultural, and social well-being. Longtime Haines resident Philip Jackson described what the spring harvest was like on the Chilkoot River when he was growing up on a recent morning with KHNS's History Talk.
We'd used to go up to Clockwan, you know, he had a big old travel hall, and he'd get the elders and all that, you know, and they'd come down, and they used to spend a whole day with us, and they'd be singing and dancing, you know, and them dipping their crackers into a pot, you know, and get the meat out of there and eat it, or dip it in the oil and eat that, you know, with crab pilot bread. It was always so much fun, you know, and hearing the elders talking and Tlingit and telling jokes and giggling and laughing was the utmost for me.
No Ulacan in the Chilkoot River isn't necessarily a bad sign. When and where the small smelt fish run from year to year can vary quite a bit. Pocart says there is a run in the Chilkoot River this year. Dozens of residents were out with nets over the weekend harvesting Ulacan for oil and smoking. A spring run was spotted in Skagway, too. Reuben Cash is the environmental coordinator with the Skagway Traditional Council.
Starting on May 1st, we went from, you know, a couple of hundred gulls down at the Tyre River in Dyea to several thousand. We saw sea lions coming cruising up the inlet, heading that way. I guess there was a humpback whale in the inlet, so lots of activity.
Cash is also collecting water samples for DNA analysis in the Tyre and Skagway rivers as part of the regional initiative.
I've heard reports that the way that the runs will usually work is there will be kind of some scouts that will go up before the main bulk of the fish will arrive. And however they're able to communicate it with the rest of the colony of fish, if the scouts are able to successfully find a place, then the fish will enter the river and the run will kind of increase from there.
He says the cruise ship season may also have impacted the runs.
And because they have an aversion to noise, they really don't like loud things. We've seen that in some other rivers around southeast when there's a lot of noise activity. The fish will just switch rivers. So my thought is that perhaps the scouts were coming up, checking out the Skagway River, and then activity from the tourist season just got to be too intense, and so they abandoned the Skagway and perhaps went to the Tyre, or they may have just turned around altogether up here. It's hard to say until we see numbers come back from the lab.
Results from the DNA sampling will help tell the story later this summer. Haines-based researcher Meredith Pocart will be analyzing results from the area rivers and the Unik River near Ketchikan and comparing observations with communities in British Columbia. And hopefully this year, they'll have a better understanding of this important fish species. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors, actors, musicians, artists, and creative minds. Raina Goebel is an expert on student loan debt. The newly revised second edition of her book, Cliff Notes Graduation Debt, How to Manage Student Loans and Live Your Life, has just been released. We spoke with her about strategies for graduates who are faced with student loan debt.
It is definitely easy to lose track of your student loans and for the student loan servicers to lose track of you. I mean, think about it. You could get a different cell phone number after college. There are all sorts of ways to lose track of. Just like Facebook does for getting in touch with your college roommate, the National Student Loan Data System will always keep track of your student loans for you. So don't worry about, I'm going to misplace this like I did. Just say, I'm going to go to the National Student Loan Data System and I'm going to look up the status of all my student loans. If there's something that is not showing repayment, then I need to fix it. I need to see if it's in default. I need to show if it just missed one payment. If it's wrong, I need to get that corrected because I don't want it hurting my credit. The first chapter of the book is dedicated to that because I think that's one of the most important things you can do is really know the status of your loans. Go to the National Student Loan Data System, start there, know what the tools are, and then look at the calculators, look at the repayment plans, but you have to at least start off with the basic recipe.
That's Raina Goebel, author of the newly revised second edition of Cliff Notes, Graduation Debt, How to Manage Student Loans and Live Your Life. There's more online, insightdailyradio.org.
Do you need to see a doctor, dentist, or optometrist? Arctic Care is offering no-cost medical, dental, optometry, and veterinary services to anyone in the Kodiak community May 4th through May 13th. To learn more about the services available through Arctic Care, the location of services, and to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 907-486-9870. Arctic Care 2022 is a no-cost healthcare service program provided by the United States Department of Defense Arctic Care Innovative Readiness Training Program in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Today is Friday the 13th. It's the 13th day of May, the year 2022. Sun rose today at 5:50. It won't set again until 10:23 this evening. That'll give us 16 hours and 33 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 11 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 80 degrees set in 1968, and a record low was 27 set in 1965. Currently 50 degrees and fair. Northwest winds to 20 steady out at the airport right now and gusting to 31. It has been a blustery day. They're calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 50. Northwest winds to 30, gusting to 40. Showers tonight, mainly after 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 41. Northwest winds to 30, gusting to 50. And showers are likely tomorrow, mainly before 7 a.m., turning to partly sunny skies with a high near 50, north winds to 15, gusting to 25. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up in just a few minutes here on the east side. That will happen at 12:54 and be a 6.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 6:39 p.m. of 9/10 of a foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 1:29, about 1:30 this afternoon. That will be a 12.3-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide of 1.4 feet at 7:26 this evening. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkenat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Saturday, northwest 30 today in the on our east side, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, northwest 30, seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, north 30, seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning tonight. Northwest 30 today, gusting to 45 out of bays and passes. Northwest 35 tonight with seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, north 25, seas to 6 feet. KMXT and the Kodiak Arts Council are excited to present beloved writer and humorist David Sedaris tomorrow, May 14th, 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. The New York Public Library voted his bestseller, Me Talk Pretty One Day, as one of the 125 most important books of the last 125 years. Morning Edition listeners may recognize Sedaris as the Christmas elf named Crumpet, from Santa Land Diaries. Mr. Sedaris will be greeting audience members and signing books before and after the show, so bring your favorite Sedaris book with you, or you can purchase a copy from the Islander Bookshop right at the show. Tickets are available at Kodiak Arts Council's website at kodiakarts.org. Also, tomorrow is World Migratory Bird Day. The Kodiak Audubon Society is celebrating with a neat Zoom presentation. You can meet Lisa and Shondell from the Alaska Bird Treatment and Learning Center and learn all kinds of things about their amazing feathered friends, Canoxic the Bald Eagle and Gertie the American Crow. Lisa will present Canoxic for the first 15 minutes, and then Shondell will present Gertie for 15 minutes after that. A question and answer session will follow. To register, just go to the Kodiak Audubon Society's Facebook page and click on the link. Or you can give them a call at 907-486-2878. The Kodiak Collective is having the Kodiak History Museum is having a Meet the Artists event. Natasha Zahn Priestess and Sarah Lowen presented a collection called Kodiak Collective. And that's happening tomorrow, 2 to 4 p.m. at the Kodiak History Museum. Get a chance to see the art and meet the artist. Kodiak Public Broadcasting's Board of Directors will be holding their next monthly board meeting on Tuesday, May 17th, via Zoom at 6:30 p.m. If you'd like to sit in on the meeting, call the station at 486-3181 or send an email requesting access to gm@kmxt.org, and a link will be promptly provided to you. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session on Wednesday, May 18th, followed by a special meeting, which will begin at 7:30 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. Public members are encouraged to web stream, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any further questions, contact the clerk's office at 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the May 13th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. I've been down south for the past week or so. Seems funny to call Minnesota down south, but it is. Normally, Minnesota is leaps and bounds ahead of us in terms of wildflowers blooming, trees budding, and so on. But this year, I'd say things were only a week or two ahead of us. Returning to the island, the first thing I noticed was the abundance of yellow. The dandelions have certainly turned out to be healthy this year. Those dandelions serve a good purpose, though, as they may be the only food source the bees have early in the spring. Spring in Kodiak also means the return of many of our favorite birds and the chance to see some unusual ones as they migrate through. The emperor geese will soon be gone, heading west and north to their nesting grounds. Meanwhile, passing through will be a variety of shorebirds all the way up to swans. Swans have been showing up on lakes and ponds here for quite a while already, and they're joined by some ducks like the northern shoveler or the big, beautiful northern pintail. Saturday is World Migratory Bird Day, a great excuse to get out with your binoculars or spotting scope to see what species you can find along the shorelines, in the trees, or on the water. Saturday night, Kodiak Arts Council and KMXT present An Evening with David Sedaris, a rare treat for the Kodiak stage. Known for his humor and quirky observations of human nature and life in general, Sedaris has a way of making you look at life and your place in the world in a little different way. Tickets are available online at kodiakarts.org or at the door an hour before the show. Mr. Sedaris will also be autographing books before and after the show. Finally, a word of hope for Sawyer and his family. May he come on in very soon.
And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun, and please stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.